Yeah, it's time to parlay, time to win a little money. Deegan and Juice with Kylan and Stucky. I know you got a chalk, but it's time for the teaser. This is how we do it when it's football season. Hey, Kylan and Stucky, yeah. Hey, Kylan and Stucky, woo.
What's up, Degenerate Nation? Welcome to Degen and Juice, episode 31. I'm Stucky, and with me, as always, Colin Wilson, coming to us live from the ice in Arkansas. Is that right?
Yeah, we had some ice storms coming on tonight. So, you know, we had Bud Walton Arena empty, and I think that favored the Hogs. But, you know, everybody shoots well against South Carolina. Everybody plays good defense against South Carolina. I think they're going to be one of the odd men out of the SEC that doesn't get into the tournament.
Yeah, that's one of the – that Arkansas win tonight is one of those games where you don't really gain much, but – if you know the on the other side of the coin, if you lost that game, it would have been really damaging. So it's kind of like you just have to win that game.
Like Kentucky's going to go into free fall now.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a terrible. I mean, Tennessee's really good. So, I mean, losing at home to Tennessee, I still think is a little different than leaving at home to South Carolina. I mean, Arkansas is another one of those games coming up with Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. You know, I think. Yeah, Kentucky is they have that at West Virginia win in their back pocket, which is going to really help. But since then, they should have lost to Vandy, and they got a miracle foul, won in overtime. Then they lost at Missouri, and then they lost at Tennessee. Now they're going to a dangerous Texas A&M team. Then they're going to Auburn, and then on the 20th, am I coming down there or what? They're at Arkansas, but before that, they're at home against Alabama. Luckily, they finish up with Missouri and Ole Miss at home, but that that February 20th game should be interesting. What's the deal there?
Yeah, we should look getting you a flight into town and probably see if we can. I mean, I know we can get you tickets. It's a midweek game, so as long as there's no ice storm, everything should be fine.
That's good enough. Well, before we get back into college basketball, if we even mention it because there is another big game this week that I do want to talk about. But first, we have to talk about the Super Bowl. It was one of the most profitable Super Bowls I've ever had. I don't think that if you listen to our podcast this week on the prop side, oh my God, or read anything mm-hmm. that we put out, I think the highlight for me was, and it was a messy day. I went to the bar at like 10, 11 in the morning, and I was out until got 2, 3 in the morning. It was a long day. And my favorite part was when Tom Brady scrambled for 4 yards and I touted everywhere. I said, look, you got it. Here's the reason I did this whole analysis on Brady's entire career, why he's going to rush. His longest rush is going to be over 2 yards. At the time, I was looking to the side talking to someone and I looked up and I saw Brady running, but it looked like he was running backwards almost. Because he had the ball and, you know, it was Brady running. It's not going to be the most, you know, the prettiest thing in the world. And I said, wait, was he going backwards or forward? And someone said forward. And I started going crazy. I said, yeah. And then people are looking at me like, what the fuck is this kid cheering at? Brady just ran for 4 yards or whatever it was. But that was really exciting because I knew I was going to have to sweat it. And it was going to be like one potential play where you could get free and he did. But it was another awesome game. That's all the Patriots do is play crazy Super Bowls that are close.
Yeah, it was a great game for me too. Like I hit almost every single prop except for Pink's hair. I mean, even the Capitals shots on goal versus the Eagles team total, that was a joke. I mean, the Eagles didn't even need the extra points in that. Mickelson had one bogey on the day. Aguilar covered that prop in the first 30 seconds.
Yeah.
First two plays of the game. I tweeted out, I was like, this prop's over. Like he's already beaten Mickelson's bogeys for the day. Missed PAT was something I hit on the side, a donk off the field goal post, anthem under 2 minutes. So there was a little bit of, you know, Twitter whispers going around that Pink came out there and had 4 or 5 trial runs, and they all came in at a minute 53. And so I logged in and you know, Bet Online had a limit of $100 and Five Dimes had a limit too. So I started, you know, pounding them the best I could. And then word finally started spreading around and still it was taking tons of over money. But she came in clean with us at a minute 53. So, you know, glad she's okay from the flu. You know, I think the lead change, we talked about this on the podcast last week. I said the lead change for the second half is plus 155, and for the fourth quarter, it's plus 285. I don't understand why that's plus money, because I went and looked at all the old Super Bowls. This is a Patriots Super Bowl. There's going to be a lead change in the second half. So that cashed too. It was a really great day, except for one little problem I have with BetOnline, where I was pinging the Patriots plus 120 live, and then once they finally took the lead, they decided to shut down all live betting until the Eagles took control again. So it's the only complaint I have from the day.
Yeah, I mean, I was the heaviest. I went really heavy on just Gronk across the board and Aguilar across the board. I know that on Action Network, we did our favorite props. I think our props overall, everyone contributed a bunch of props at 52 props for 52 for Super Bowl 52. They went 29, 20, and 3. I mainly just spread out as much Gronk props and Aguilar props that I could get, which did really well. Gronk now, in that favorite props piece, I put Gronk touchdown. I mean, if you have to remove the Jacksonville game where he got hurt, the six playoff games before then, he scored a touchdown. He actually scored seven total. He had a plus matchup, and, you know, he obviously scored two touchdowns, and he basically cashed almost all of the props on that one drive to start the second half. Mm-hmm. So that was really nice. Now, two things I completely forgot. Like I told you, it was a long day, a lot of drinking. I was trying to log into this live chat thing that we're really going to get up and running. We were kind of just doing a trial run of it, but I was starting off the Super Bowl in there. So I didn't even see the anthem or anything. I completely forgot about your pink hair prop.
Yeah.
What color hair did she have?
Well, she came out with blonde hair completely, you know, which got down as low as minus 150, but it was hanging around minus 500. And, you know, that was all just, I saw it at 8-1. And I thought there's a chance that she's going to, I mean, she's known for coloring her hair. But then word broke out on TMZ and everywhere else that she had the flu. She couldn't complete certain notes. You know, she was short of breath and she didn't even know if she was going to be able to go. So I'm sure coloring her hair and putting on, you know, the best, you know, outfit possible was farthest thing from her mind, because you could tell when she sung the song, you know, she kind of had the gleary eyes and she wasn't going too deep in some of her notes. Like I know she can. So I think her hair was the farthest thing from her brain, but
this is why, you know. This is why I decided to do the podcast with you, because you're here for that hard hitting wardrobe
and the filthy
analysis.
And Justin Timberlake filthy. We said, take filthy. We got the pod published last week, and then about 24 hours, filthy was taken off the board. So that was another winner.
One of the funniest things that I heard, was, the whole controversy, or not controversy, but the swirl about the Dilly Dilly prop. And one of the guys who wrote that up, who ended up, a book had to take it down because they got so much action and the line was so bad. But he was like, he sent a message. I think he was obviously being facetious, but he was saying, I'm getting death threats about these Dilly Dilly. So I'm assuming there wasn't that many Dilly Dilly said.
Yeah. I was having this debate on Twitter. I threw it out there. I said, listen, I think there's only been two commercials. And I think Dilly Dilly itself, that phrase has only been said four times. So I think we're at eight. Now, I didn't have any props down on it because it was taken off the board. It came back up on the board. For some reason, the under was now the heavy favorite. So I stayed away from it. I'm pretty sure it sailed way under. And, you know, that got everybody. Everybody was so excited about this Dilly Dilly thing. And then it was barely even said.
Yeah, I don't know why these companies that pay for these commercials, they're going to start to realize the people that are in, you know, that are not house moms we don't really watch commercials. I mean, it goes to commercial. I look at my phone. I'm looking at people, where everyone's looking at their phone. They're talking. I mean, I don't know how you can justify spending $10 million. What I think, Budweiser, would they run a minute ad to tell everyone that they donated $100,000 in water? I mean, it's probably cost a couple hundred thousand to make the commercial. It cost $10 million. Why not just take the $10 million and donate the water and then tweet it or something? I mean, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. That just screams out the day and age we live in.
So in another life, I have a manufacturing background. I write software and I know inventory, like global supply, you know, supply chain type shit. There's no Budweiser factory out there in the world that holds canned stock that specifically says water. They would have had to have waited weeks to get those cans in, just said water on them before they could even pour water in them and get them out to where it needed to be. It's a ridiculous commercial.
Yeah, and just the premise. They're spending like $10 million. It's $5 million for every 30 seconds. $10 million to say, hey, we donated $100,000 in water. Like, just insane. I tweeted out. Someone said someone did this, but I tweeted out at the time when I think everyone's TVs went black at one point. Mm-hmm. But that's what I would do. I'd take 5 seconds, right, you know, maybe, and I would make sure my spot is right when, you know, maybe like the fourth or fifth spot. So people are thinking about the game coming back on. You black out the screen, 4 to 5 seconds, cost nothing to produce. And then at the end, you just put up your logo. And everyone's watching because everyone will start freaking out and looking. That's it. I know that. So I started researching this. Someone said web.com did it like 15 years ago. I don't remember that. But I did. I started searching and I saw that Miller High Life, like in like 2011, they did this commercial where it was just a 1 second, like little something came up, but it was just a guy holding one of their spokespeople holding a beer, and that was it. And then it just said Miller High Life. So I mean, it's just like, hey, let's just get it out there. It's, you know, 1/30th of the price of a 30-second ad, and that's it. But that's what I would do. I would just show a black screen, 4 seconds, make everyone freak out, and then just show Action Network, and everyone would be like, "What the fuck?" So
drive traffic.
Yeah, that's all you're trying to do. All right. So, and the other one that I didn't listen to or I didn't hear and I didn't check just popped into my head. Football Outsiders. Did Chris Collinsworth say it?
He did not say it. But he got.
Football Focus. I'm sorry.
Yeah, there was actually a player's name too, and I forgot who it was, but they had already said it 3 times, and Collinsworth was about to say it again, and Al Michaels hushed him. They knew every single prop on the board. I guarantee they knew every single prop on the board.
Wait, player said it? What do you mean?
No. They had already said this player's name 3 times.
Okay.
And the prop was over under 3.5 on his name being said. And I can't think of exactly who it was. It was one of the players in the game. And it got hushed. Al Michaels shushed him. I'll have to go and research it on YouTube, but like they knew the props. They absolutely knew all the props. Now it said Pro Football Focus on all the graphics that came up, but Chris Collinsworth never said it out loud.
Wow. I've heard him say it before. So I didn't even know he was affiliated with the company. So the fact that it stuck into my head that I've heard him say it, I'm surprised that he didn't use, I mean, that's as free of marketing as you can get.
He was too busy worrying about all his Patriots bets and talking shit about the refs and the decisions they were making. So,
well, it's pretty funny. If you go and listen to the touchdown to Big Dick Nick when they threw to him, when they did I forget what they actually called the play, but on that fourth down call, and this is what the Eagles did, and this is what you have to do, and the Jags didn't do it. When you play the Patriots, you have to stay aggressive. Eagles have done it. That's really what Peterson's known for. They've called aggressively all season long. Now there was questions whereas you get to the Super Bowl and all of a sudden you start to panic and then you get conservative, but they didn't. And that was one of the calls that I think, you know, really demonstrated that. But on that, if you go back and watch that play, Al Michaels says, "How about that?" And then, "Whoa." And Chris Collins doesn't even say anything. He doesn't even add anything. I feel like I could just feel his saltiness when I went back and watched it again. It wasn't the greatest called game in the world.
Right. No, but definitely not.
So, all right. So yeah, it was a great Super Bowl overall. And, unless you were a Patriots fan, I was really happy for my family. My mom's got to see a Super Bowl, my pops. My sister's actually a Patriots fan, which is weird. So I was happy to see my family and some of my friends back home. And it's easier to be happier as myself. I'm a Ravens fan, as everyone here knows. But it's easier for me to be happier for everyone there when I don't have to like deal with any of the annoying aspects of the fan base. Like it's just my family and good friends. So like from afar, I was very happy that they were able to get it done. Now the question is, where does Big Dick Nick go?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, there's already props out there, and even the Browns, I think, are listed at 5-1. So I don't know where he's going to go, but yeah, I mean, I think I was reading.
He would rot. He would rot in Cleveland. He'll have like 30 picks. I can just see it. Whatever. He's got a ring and an MVP.
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty much set, but I mean, he would look good in, I don't know, wouldn't he look good at Minnesota? I mean, I don't know where he's going to end up, but I read an article today.
The last thing Minnesota needs is another quarterback.
Teddy Bridgewater's coming back too, right?
I assume, yeah, that's their guy from everything I hear.
I don't think we know if Wentz is going to be fully healthy by week one next year. I mean, wouldn't they? I don't know what they would want to do. They want to give Foles a whole bunch of money, but I mean,
Foles is going to capitalize on this as he should and get a huge payday, which means he has to go somewhere where they don't have a quarterback or they're really bad. Maybe he goes to, Arizona.
Yeah,
maybe
that's
he
a good
goes
fit.
To Cleveland. But I mean, if I were him, I'd want to go to Arizona. But yeah, it's a pretty amazing story. And then you also had the news come out that McDaniels is staying staying put in New England. He turned down the job in Indianapolis, which I was surprised to hear. And then there's still, I think it's still a little murky on what exactly happened with Malcolm Butler, because that's a huge story for him to sit out.
Well, there's a lot. Everybody I'm hearing is saying that he was smoking some weed. There was one report of a girl being, I mean, what is this, college? He can't have a girl with him after curfew in his room, but yeah, that he was smoking weed or something. I mean, this is like a story from the SEC, it sounds like. But, you know,
we'll never get the full story either from them.
No, no. Yeah. And the thing is Malcolm Butler's trying to protect his own hide. He wants a contract, right?
Yeah, I mean,
he needs to get his money before he goes and shoots his mouth off, so.
Yeah, that was definitely a something that I was shocked by to hear. But yeah, another great Super Bowl. I mean, people are always like, "Oh, the Patriots in the Super Bowl again." But I mean, like always, it's like a 3 or 4 point game, and they're usually the best Super Bowls we've had over the last 15 years. They involve the Patriots.
So let's play a small little game for a couple minutes. Let's play Super Bowl 53 next year. It's being played in Atlanta that damn Mercedes-Benz. I don't know if it's Stadium or Avenue or whatever the hell they're calling that thing. But, it, you know, it looks like a command center from StarCraft. I know you play a lot of StarCraft.
What the hell is StarCraft?
You know what StarCraft is. You bet on it. The esports. You love it.
Oh, well, yeah. I bet on I'm 1-0 lifetime in esports. I was on like a really – it was a betting binge. I was just red hot. When you're just in the zone and anything you touch is just – you can just look at a game and you know the winner is going to be. And – it was all weekend. I couldn't lose. And then I was like, what's up next? It was like Saturday morning. And it was before like a huge college basketball and college football game started. So someone tweeted back at me, esports. I went and I looked up the lines and I was like, all right, I think I like this guy or a team name. I don't even know what it was, like a team name. And then I tweeted out that I'm betting it. And then someone sent me a link to watch this thing. I could watch on my computer this other people playing this that I'm betting on. And and then I got happy. I said, and he won, and I was like, yeah. And then someone was like, dude, it's best of three, so I didn't know that. And then he lost the second, and I was like, oh my god, I'm gonna lose money on esports before this Saturday card. And then this guy or team of guy, I don't even know, E-Dot or something, he won the third, and then I hung up my cleats and I've never bet on esports again.
What's funny about this story is that you had no clue. I remember when this happened. You had no clue there was a subculture of us, you know, nerd dork assholes out there that play StarCraft. Like, I played it since college, you know, and when it was a thing that you could bet and you could watch it live on Twitch, and then, you know, and to see you get involved in it, you know, we started hammering parlays on it. But, you know, this is great. We're going to get you into some StarCraft.
I wish I could remember the name. I don't know. I'll figure it out. I'm going to go back and look at my history. It was a while ago, man. But, all right, but go ahead. What game do you want to play?
Well, let's play Super Bowl 53 next year. I'm going to give you odds of some of the favorites, of some of the ones that are higher up on the board, and I'll just make a little mention of your schedule, and you tell me what you think about next year. Like, you know, they need to draft an offensive lineman. Like, frankly, I saw the Chargers. I won't mention them. I bought the Chargers last night at 40-1. I put a buck down on them because, in my opinion, they're two decent offensive linemen away from, you know, Rivers being able to do his thing. The defense is playing great. They were 1-4 in coin flip games this year, games decided by 3 points. So I love the Chargers. The schedule's batshit easy next year. It's Bengals, Browns, everybody that's bad, the Chargers get to play next year. So I hit them 41, but I'll start at the top of the board. The Pats are plus 475. They host Green Bay, Minnesota, Kansas City. They go to Jacksonville and Pittsburgh. I don't think I want to lay this. Like, I mean,
no, zero value.
Yeah, zero. Zero. So Eagles are plus 670. That's crazy. Is that not crazy?
Yeah, that's insane. Don't show me any NFL team future before the year starts. It's under 10-1. I don't care who they are.
Okay, then what about?
I mean, you could talk about them here. I'm just saying, for me personally,
I wouldn't hit any of these. It's kind of like Alabama right now. Listen, everybody, I do think Alabama is going to make the playoff, right? I mean, two is amazing, and I don't want to hear about, you know, how they're sixth in the recruiting rankings right now. They had double digit number of players that are freshmen and sophomores that made tackles. They're going to be fine. They're going to make the playoff. But at this point in the year, I'm not going to bet plus 220 to win the national title. That's ridiculous. That number will be there in August. That number will be there in September. That number will be there in August. Outside of 10-1, for the NFL, your Ravens are at 50-1. I wrote this down. They host Oakland, Denver, New Orleans. They go to Atlanta, Kansas City. They go to the Chargers, but they're 50-1 right now.
Yeah, I mean, what they need, I mean, number one, they need Jimmy Smith to stay healthy is the number one thing that can happen. But, I mean, And when he went down, Humphrey showed that he's going to be a stud. So their secondary is going to be fine. Their secondary is really, really good. Now they're going to have to find someone to replace like the leadership and pass rush of Suggs, who had a resurgence. I mean, yeah, I think he still has another decent year ahead of him, but it really comes down to the offense. I mean, their special teams is going to be the best in the NFL. That's just a given. They probably have the best punter in the NFL. They do have the best kicker in the NFL. But it comes down to the offense. I mean, when you look back at it, they played multiple games this year when Perryman was their first round draft pick of 2 or 3 years ago, was a healthy scratch. I mean, that's a wide receiver, and they had no wide receivers, was a healthy scratch. The years when they, you know, besides in 2001, when they had they had Ishmael then, but, you know, when they get to the playoffs and they're really good, think about when the Super Bowl, and they won in 2012, they had Bolden. Then their offense had something going when they had Steve Smith. You know, Flacco needs a really strong possession receiver because he can throw the out as well as anyone. And then you need like some possession receiver for the defense to respect, which then sets up the deep ball. And like Perryman is just trash. Macklin is getting, he's just hurt all the time. So the receivers are terrible, even at tight end. I mean, their offensive line will be fine. But it's the fact that they don't have targets on the outside in a passing league, and it just kills them. And Flacco's not going to really overcome that. So I wanted them to get Jarvis Landry so bad, who, by the way, if he somehow ended up on the Patriots, he would have like 250 catches. But that's what I'm going to be eyeing. I need to see what they're going to do at wide receiver. The problem is that if you wait until the draft, Ozzie usually goes with the best player. You can't really argue with his results except for receiver. Part of me doesn't want him to draft a receiver. He drafted Travis Taylor in the first round, I believe, a while back from Florida. Bust. Perriman's a bust. He obviously doesn't have an eye. Everyone has that weakness. Like Saban can't find a kicker, and a lot of times a quarterback. But Ozzie obviously can't find receivers. He has to do that through free agency. I know a lot of these elite organizations don't like to do that, but that's obviously a position that's important enough, and the Ravens have been, you know, have struggled to find that except in free agency. Where do you think Bolden came from and Steve Smith? I think they need to do that. If they do that and they, you know, they get healthy, which you can't predict, they're at 50-1, there's value for days, especially with the Steelers being, I mean, the Steelers don't have a defense, especially without Shazier. They have a lot of questions. Their offense will be there, but at 8-1, that's a joke with their coaching and defense.
Yep. Yep. What do you think about, let's switch over to the AFC East, because obviously all the talk is going to be Gruden. They're already listed at 21-1 for the Super Bowl, which is crazy for the Raiders, but the Chiefs are listed at 30-1. And you have to think that the Chiefs brass believes in Mahomes being an upgrade over Alex Smith. So did this team take a step back? I mean, 30-1 seems like it's a lot of room there to do something with it.
Yeah. You meant West. I think you said East, but yeah, I don't believe in Mahomes. I mean, I said it when they drafted him, I laughed hysterically, just like I did with Kevin when the Eagles drafted Kevin Cobb. A lot of these system quarterbacks, you know, I guess that, you know, they can end up okay, but I don't know why the Chiefs fell in love with him. Plus he's still raw. What did he got in for a game this year? There's going to be a learning curve there if he even does pan out, which I don't necessarily see. I wasn't right. A believer in him. He was along the lines of Johnny Manziel. I laughed. I told everyone he's not going to do anything in the NFL. Same with Cobb. And I also said that about Mariota. I said Mariota's going to be a bust. I think it's still TBD, but at least he's like starting, although he's kind of, looks like he's regressing in a way.
Nope. Nobody bounces a pass to themselves like Marcus Mariota does.
Yeah. So I don't personally see it. With the Chiefs, I mean, I guess, you know, if I was pricing it out, there's some value at 31. But I don't want essentially a rookie quarterback next year, you know, in a team that just doesn't seem to get over the hump. So and Raiders should be better also, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And hopefully they don't have any more of this internal thing going on in the locker room between Carr and his offensive line and some of the stuff that kind of leaked out of there this year. So the last one that I'll leave you with is Saints at 15-1. I mean, they're not going to take a step back on offense. I think if they could draft a couple more defensive pieces, they're already a stellar team, a Super Bowl worthy contending team. Their road games are, you know, kind of a joke next year. They're going to the Giants, they're going to the Bengals. I like them a lot, but I mean, 15-1 seems short. I'm going to shop around, maybe get 20-1 or better.
Yeah. I'd also maybe look at them in the NFC. that I really do like their roster. And really what they need to do, and it's I think that in the draft you can get – they need to get bigger. Their offensive line is solid. Their defensive backfield is great. And then obviously you know about their offense with their two-headed monster, and they have talent on the outside. And, I mean, their offense is really elite. And they had some bad – I think they had – part of their third down struggles, I think, were part luck this year. They will get at the end of the year, they didn't even have a tight end. But what they really need is to get better on run defense. And it's not impossible to do. You know, I think through the draft and in free agency, what they need to focus on is they need to focus on a linebacker and especially, you know, defensive interior linemen. Because they can get to the quarterback with Cam, but I think that they need to get better at linebacker and then up front on defense. If they can do that effectively, yeah, I mean, that team is dangerous as hell, and they should come in with a chip on their shoulder the way that they lost last year. I mean, the only thing is with the two things that I agree with you with the Chargers, by the way, I'm going to hit them tonight if that's the price. The two things that bother me with each of those teams is the only thing that gives me any pause is that the Chargers have zero home field advantage.
Yep.
Right. So that hurts them in that, like, a lot of times you're like, all right, well, we get a couple games a year. But I mean, essentially they don't any home field advantage. Plus they always start slow. But you hope that you can't really cap for that. But with the Saints, the thing that bothers me is their division. I mean, their division is going to be tough again. So not, I mean, I think that they get to the playoffs, but I mean, that division is a dogfight, and like it could hold them back from home field, which this year they got lucky in that there wasn't a lot of outdoor NFL, their NFC teams, but you know, that could be the difference of getting to the Super Bowl and not them having a much more difficult path to securing home field and, or even a first round bye. I mean, this year that whole division came down to like the last weekend, who's going to have a bye, who's even getting in. I mean, so that hurts them a little bit, I think. The fact that their division is stacked, and I mean, I think the Bucs are even going to be better. The Bucs were decimated on defense by injuries, so that's the only two things that give me pause. But yeah, if you put a gun to my head right now, I'd take the Chargers. As long as I see the Ravens do something at wide receiver and hear a little bit more about their health, I'll take a flyer on them. And then, yeah, in the NFC, I think it's the Saints is probably have the most value at 15-1. But I mean, that division is tough.
Yeah, definitely. And Chargers were 40-1 on BetOnline last night. I believe they're 30-1 on Five Dimes, and in town they are 25-1 at the Westgate.
All right, I'll have to search around. Speaking of which, you mentioned that Bama's their recruiting class. We have signing day is tomorrow. Now, I know with college football now, a lot of that's already done for the most part. There are some residual 4 and 5 stars and some 3 stars that will sign tomorrow. Is there anything that's going to happen newsworthy, anything in the markets worth watching, or is this mainly going to be a dud of a day? And is there anything you're keeping your eye on in general in the offseason for any specific team?
I think the big news is the number 5 overall player, Patrick Surtain Jr., who is the son of a, you know, former NFL defensive back. He's trying to make his decision between LSU, Miami, Alabama could scoop him. Right now, it's Georgia, Ohio State, and Alabama all playing tug of war for the number 1 spot. Clemson brought in a great class. They filled some needs. They've even got another core. They've got a true freshman coming in. This guy is supposed to be better than Kelly Bryant.
Yeah.
The rich got richer. I think a couple things that stick out to me. Boise's the best. They're going to have the best class out of all the non-power fives, out of the group of five.
And they bring a lot back, right?
Yeah, and they bring a ton back. Yeah, they're going to keep rolling. South Florida is, you're going to see some articles come out later about returning production and how it affects their point spread and their power rating. And South Florida has taken a huge dive this year, but at the same time, they did really well in recruiting. They finished in the top 50. They should tomorrow. One of the things that really surprised me is that Baylor is going to finish 4th overall in the Big 12, and I think right at about 25th in the nation. So I mean, Matt Rhule's down there. I mean, he's really busting it down there. I mean, for a 1-11 team to finish 4th in the Big 12, that's a pretty impressive. And then the other thing that I laughed at, and I'm still laughing, and I'm going to laugh tomorrow, is that Arizona State, I think, barely is in the top 100, and they're dead last in the Pac-12. And
Herm doesn't know what he's doing, I don't think.
Oh, this is such a train wreck. It's going to be so much fun. It's Pac-12 bad. After dark. But it's no, I mean, I get a lot of questions about this. I don't adjust any power ratings whatsoever based on signing day. I mean, Tua was one of the biggest recruits in years, and I didn't adjust Alabama anyway. And it doesn't affect the futures market, even though freshmen are becoming such a big impact on the college football game. There's a ton of them, so it's hard to pick out which one you think is going to have the biggest impact. So that as far as power ratings go, that's – but, yeah, back to Herm, this is a train wreck, and I can't wait. It's going to be so much entertainment.
By the way, you mentioned Baylor and laughing. Are you going to bet another Baylor future so your trolls can laugh at you? but the other thing I wanted to ask is about two teams in the SEC. Florida, I know that we mentioned this offline in the conversation – you're interested in them if they get a quarterback. And the other thing that I'm interested in, you know, being from Philly, and I love this kid ever since he signed down at Georgia with their backs gone. And, you know, can I get some Swift love for Heisman? What do you think of those two things?
I love DeAndre Swift. First off, as it goes for Florida. Yeah, this will be the first time I publicly talked about it, but I love Florida. Now, Dave, I've got a, you know, they're the top dog in the SEC as far as increase into power rating in the offseason. They return a whole bunch on offense. You know, they didn't do much because of the Jim McElwain and the Doug Neusmeyer. They just refused to change. They refused to run an offense that fit the personnel that they had. They were a dumpster fire. They gave up on the season after they lost to LSU. The talent's there. Florida has the talent. The defense can be elite. And Dan Mullen's going back. And remember, he was the offensive coordinator there for the national championships. He was Tim Tebow's offensive coordinator. He was Dak Prescott's head coach. He's going back. If Dan Mullen can get a quarterback at Florida, that's all they're missing. I'm not sure if Philippe Franks is going to progress any of this offseason. We'll have to watch him in the spring game to see, you know, if he's healthy. But I mean, I've got my eye on Florida. They're 100-1 at the Westgate. They're 75-1 on Five Dimes. And as far as a power rating perspective goes, now that I'm done adjusting them against Georgia, I've got them as 7.5-point dogs on a neutral site, which they will play each other, of course. But Georgia also has to play Auburn. Now, Florida has a little bit of an easier schedule, so we'll get into this much later in the season. If Dan Mullen can somehow procure some sort of any kind of quality at quarterback, you're going to see some Florida futures come out of me, but I'm waiting. I'm patiently going to wait on these guys. DeAndre Swift, absolutely. The problem is I haven't seen any Heisman props. Westgate has yet to put them up. They had them up this time last year. They had them up for maybe 3 days on Five Dimes, and Tua took a hell of a lot of money, and they wiped them all off the board. DeAndre Swift was on that list, but yeah, absolutely. Georgia should absolutely run wild. The problem is there were a lot of running backs that didn't even get a lot of carries or get any playing time in Georgia's system. I mean, there's more than DeAndre Swift. That's the problem. That's the same problem with Alabama and all the running backs they have is, you know, Damian Harris has had to share it with, you know, three other backs every year. And Bo Scarborough and just it just goes down the line. So it's hard taking a running back.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, just to make it official, I'm going to say this on the pod that I'm going to be adding a Chargers future.
That's a winner!
All right, but before we sign off here, I know that people are really going to start ramping up their interest in college basketball. If they haven't already, there's a little bit of a hangover after the Super Bowl for a couple of days where, you know, people are in the dark and just, but then they're starting to be like, all right, let me see what this college basketball thing's all about. On Thursday, we have Carolina Duke, which is a pretty fascinating game because of where these two teams are. You have Duke coming off the St. John's loss. UNC lost three in a row before their last game against Pitt. We're going to have a huge betting preview that I'm actually leading. We'll have like analysis from Jordan. I'll have some situational analysis, some background. We'll have a bunch of our staff contribute to that. So look out for that. That'll be ready by Thursday morning. Been working on it all day and will tomorrow as well. I think they over the last 100 games, they've split 50-50. UNC hasn't beat Duke at home in back-to-back years in 20 years, which I thought was crazy. But everyone knows how great this rivalry is. Most sports fans will be tuned in on Thursday at 8. I want to talk, before we sign off here, just rivalries in general. This is always a hot topic among sports fans at bars. Number one, I feel like I have a good perspective on rivalries. So I lived in Philly, and I grew up around Philly, and the biggest one there is, I think, Philly, the Eagles-Cowboys. And then I went to school in D.C. and lived there for 4 years. Redskins, Cowboys, kind of the same thing. And now I live in Lexington, and, you know, the Louisville, Kentucky, University of Kentucky is no joke. I mean, that the hatred is vile. So I've seen a lot of good rivalries. I mean, when people ask me in a bar, I usually say it's, I mean, you have to, I think you only can say North Carolina, Duke, or Red Sox, Yankees, given, you know, how good they've been. And I think that you could argue that with North Carolina, Duke, it's the proximity is a big factor. Like, they're right down the road from each other. It's like, hey, your brother is a Carolina fan, your uncle's a Duke fan. Whereas Boston and New York, it really isn't as intertwined, but you have those entire cities that go at it. I don't think you can go wrong with either one. Curious to get what would you would say is the biggest rivalry in sports, and then what is your perspective on rivalries? Like, this?
Oh, it's really tough for Arkansas, because when I grew up, we were in the Southwest Conference, and our big rival was Texas. Of course, Texas thinks they're in a rivalry with Oklahoma, and then everybody in the state of Texas thinks they're in a rivalry with Texas, and Texas is really kind of in bed with everybody else. So since we've joined the SEC, we don't really have a true rival, as LSU thinks they're rivals with Alabama. So as far as other rivalries go, I wrote down the most important ones today, and of course, Red Sox-Yankees was at the very top. You know, I'll never get over there's just such a long history there with, and I always laugh thinking about Pedro Martinez throwing Don Zimmer down. And then, you know, I've also got, Duke and Carolina. But other than those, I wrote these down because I just wanted there to be a ferocity within in these. Like, I wanted there to be felonies, possibly deaths, all kinds of nastiness going on in these rivals. And I think about the Dodgers and Giants. I mean, a fan actually got beat up until he died, right? And it seems like, I mean, I've been to Dodgers games out at Chavez Ravine, and there's no drinking in the parking lot. It's like the only MLB park that I go to, and you can't drink because there's been so many attacks and felonies, and a guy died, and you can't even have one Bud Light out in the parking lot before you go to a Dodgers game. So Giants-Dodgers is really got to go up there. Leafs, Canadians, and hockey. I mean, the Canadian fan bases, I mean, it is life or death on some of these wins and losses. I spent a good 6 month stint on a work up in Montreal, and they're some of the craziest fans I've ever seen when it comes to that. Michigan, Ohio State, it's the longest running college football. You know, they hate each other. I'm kind of nah on the whole thing, but if you're wrapped up in it, it's a pretty big deal. Cubs Cards, I've attended many Cubs Cards. They genuinely dislike each other, not Giants Dodgers type felon activities, but you're never going to sit inside of a Cubs Cards game and every single fan in the building knows everything about the game of baseball, and they know the history behind the two teams that's happened in the previous 100 years. I wrote down Nadal and Federer. I think, you know, they're one of the best. It's a generational rivalry that, you know, can't be compared. You know, nothing can go up against that in a head-to-head matchup. And then the last one I had was the holy war between Utah and BYU. But Utah leads that series 60-34, so I'm not sure how much of a rivalry that is.
Yeah, I mean, I like some of those on the list. I think you also mentioned Lakers-Celtics. And I also should add to my history, I mean, I had – you know, season tickets forever to the Ravens. The Ravens Steelers is a great rivalry too. I don't think it's up there historically. I mean, the Ravens have only been around since 96, but those two franchises and fan bases generally hate each other. I mean, the thing with Fed Nadal is, and like women's tennis, you could say Serena Sharapova, but I mean, Serena owns her, but they hate each other. Whereas Fed and Nadal, it's more, you know, you have generational fans who like will argue one or the other, and they've both won so much, but they don't hate each other as much. You know, there's right. So much. I mean, Fed is all class. But yeah, I mean, I think that if you say, I mean, I guess there's probably people out there that are listening that are saying from a historical perspective, Bears, Packers probably deserves a mention as well. And then I don't know from a soccer perspective, since it's one of the only sports I don't really know about. I mean, Argentina, Brazil, probably. I guess I think that's I could have sounded really stupid. And then like maybe Barcelona, Real Madrid. And the only reason I say that is because someone was telling me about that rivalry the other day. So I'm going to act like I know all about that rivalry now. But you put a gun to my head, I say Red Sox, Yankees.
Yeah, me too.
So wait. So you don't have a rival in your you have Royals. You're a Royals fan.
Yeah, yeah. Arkansas. We have a clear.
Yeah, but I'm saying that you hate.
Oh, I mean, I hate. I mean, I the problem is I cheer for. I hate a lot of teams. I don't hate just one team specifically, and I cheer for the SEC when we go to the bowl season.
So who's your most hated team in all of sports? Wow, did I just stump you on this question? You don't have a most hated team? Like, mine's the Steelers. You ask me that in my sleep, I'll wake up and say the Steelers.
Oh, if I had to pick one team that I just...
Like, who do you hate the most?
Yeah, I throw up in my mouth, it's the Toronto Blue Jays. And specifically in 1985, we played them in the ALCS. We came back from 3-1. And in 2015, we won the World Series, but we had to go through Toronto.
Toronto Blue Jays, that's your answer?
I hate them. I hate them.
All the teams in the world, as a Royals fan, you said the Toronto Blue Jays. Not even the Cardinals? The Cardinals.
Have you been in a playoff series? I hate the Cardinals too, but we beat them.
I been in a series? Yes. I grew up a Phillies fan and Joe Carter. So anyone.
Right.
Well, yeah. Right, but still, I mean, it's Toronto. I mean, they're not good. I mean, in Toronto baseball, that can't be my number one. But whatever. You live in Arkansas. You don't have rivals. This is what I would expect.
No, Arkansas. Well, I mean, we hated Texas, but I mean... everybody's a rival with Texas. That doesn't make us anything. I mean, we were.
The Cardinals beat you in a World Series.
I hate the Cardinals too, but we beat them. I mean, we cheated and we had a ref in the pocket. I mean, we won in 1985 because of a bad call. I mean, I feel bad that we won that World Series. I mean, Don Deekinger made a really bad call that let us win the World Series. I just kind of laugh when Cardinal fans get... And they infiltrate Kauffman Stadium every time we have a series. I mean, it's like 75% red inside of Kauffman. I mean, it gets on my nerves, but I mean, it's kind of like having a wife. I mean, I had one of those before. I had to live with her. It sucked, but I had to, you know, I had to move on day by day.
I'm going to laugh at you for this one for a while. But all right, Toronto, the Blue Jays is your answer. Wow, I was up 5 on Michigan State, by the way, with 7 to go. It was clearly... looking ahead to Purdue this weekend. But all right, I think that's all I got. One of the things I did want to mention is if you guys have any, you know, we're going to cover a plethora of topics every week, but if you guys have any ideas for guests who we're going to continue to have on, feel free to tweet either at myself or Colin, and we'll see what we can do. You know, well, once baseball approaches, we'll get some baseball. When there's horse racing, whatever the relevant event is, we'll talk more college hoops and football as always. But that's all I had. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining me, Colin, and we'll catch you all later. Cheers.
With so much drama in the LBC, it's kind of hard being Snoop D-O-double-G, but I somehow, some way, keep coming up with funky-ass shit like every single day. May I kick a little something for the G's and make a few ends as I breeze through. 2 in the morning and the party still jumping cause my mama ain't home. I got bitches in the living room getting it on and they ain't leaving till 6 in the morning. So what you wanna do? Shit, I got a pocket full of rubbers and my homeboys do too.